Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Batra Daf Kuf Nun. We will begin by Ezer Hashem Yisbarach and Daf Kuf Nun Amud Aleph, 8 lines from the top. Kol Hecha D'Tani. We've been discussing that our Mishnah said that if the Shchimera retains some assets for himself, that it's not considered a Matana Shchimera with all the special rules that come with a Matana Shchimera. Ask the Gemara. We learned also in our previous shiur that Rabbi Yosef's opinion is, when it says kol shehu, it means even a kol shehu, just the slightest amount. Ask the Gemara, kol hech the tani kol shehu, is that true that whatever the word kol shehu is mentioned, less shiur, it means without any shiur at all? But Tanan asked the Gemara, we know that the Torah says that the rishis hageis, the first wool that's cut off the sheep, has to be given to the kohen as one of the matnas kahuna. And the Gemara Masechta Chulin, Daf Kuf Lamed Hey, discusses how much wool do we have to give. If Dais Ben Hukkanis Oimer, Chamish Rechelis Geizes us, we have to have cutting wool from 5 sheep, mono pras. From each sheep, we take off a mono pras of wool. That is the minimum of the Reishis Hageis. That's when you have Chayavas Bereshis Hageis. That's what we have to give to the Kohen. The Chum say, Chum Shrechelis Gozes Kol Shehen. That the Chum use our wording, the wording of Kol Shehen. But the Gemara over there in Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin explains, Amrinan, what is the definition according to the Chum of Kol Shehen? Kama Kol Shehen, Amarav, Mono Pras. A Mono Pras amongst all 5 amongst all 5 of those animals, ovat sheim chamashos. But they add one more thing. Each sheep has to contribute a fifth of the mana and a half. It's not that we take, as long as we have a mana and a half combined, each sheep has to give at least a fifth of that mana and a half. So we see that kol shehu does come with a shear. And therefore, the Gemara's question explained to Rishonim is, Hakar Reb Yosef, and the question here is, we're seeing that the Mishnah used the word kol shehu, and it comes with a shear. So why in our Mishnah does Reb Yosef say, when it says kol shehu, it means kol shehu? Answers the Gemara, Hasam b'dinhu d'loylis n'kol shehu. Correct. The Chum should not have used the word in kol shehu, because it's misleading. Because the word kol shehu, says Reb Yosef, means no shear, even the smallest amount. Just I did the Kama Tana Kama, since the Tana Kama spoke about a shear amount, and the shear rabbit, it was quite a significant amount, particularly if we compare his opinion versus the opinion of the Chachamim, Iunami shears out that they say a much smaller shear, whereas the Tana Kama required a month and a half from Dice, required a month and a half from each animal, they require a month and a half combined by 5 animals. And that's why they call it a kol shehu. But it doesn't mean a kol shehu. It just means much less than what the Tana Kama said. So in other words, Rabbi Yosef is saying that indeed when the Mishnah uses the word kol shehu, it means kol shehu. However, here, in Reishis Hageis, it doesn't mean kol shehu, and it was only used in context between the difference between the Tana Kama, Rabbi Yosef, and the Chachamim. So the interesting question that the Paiskim discuss is that the mitzvah of Reishis Hageis applies forever. And therefore, if somebody has sheep and he's cutting the wool of the sheep, he has to give it to the Kohen. But because we don't know who really is a Kohen nowadays, so what we try to do is sell the sheep to an Akum. And by selling the sheep to an Akum, there's no Chiv of Reishis Hageis. The Chiv of Reishis Hageis is only by animals that are owned by Jews. But what happens if that wasn't done? There's a chiv reishis hageis, but we can't give it to the kohen, given that we don't know really who the kohen is, and that's why we discard it. The question is, what is the halacha? Do we still have this minimum shear? Or do we say, since it's going to be discarded anyway, why should we have a shear? And the question really depends, when we speak about this shear that we just learned in the Gemara, the Machlokes, what is the amount that has to be given for Reishis Hageis? Normally, throughout Halacha, whenever a shear is mentioned, it's a Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. And if here too it represents halacha l'moshe m'sinai, then it's not negotiable. Because halacha l'moshe m'sinai is halacha l'moshe m'sinai under all circumstances. If, however, the way we look at this is not that it's a shir, but rather the way it's understood, the way to understand it is that it's what Chazal establishes the amount. It could be given that the circumstances changed the amount is also not daf grat shir. Continues the Gemara Pshita. Omar metatel aplonya. If somebody says I'm transferring all my talent to a certain individual, what he meant to say was, "Kol mani tashmish dekani." He meant to transfer everything that he uses, levar michiti visari, except for barley and wheat, because they are not in the category of a metatlin, because metatlin are something that you use. Chiti and sari are not considered something that they use. And as the Rashbam explains, the Gemara here is speaking about a shchimera that's transferring his assets with the concept of the very shchimera k'ksuvim k'msurim dami, or a healthy person that's making a kinyan. The question that I saw the Rishonim debate is what is going to be the din regarding his animals. So the Rashbam's opinion is that animals are also not included. Just like Chiti and Sari are not included, so too are animals not included. There are other Rishonim that disagree. And they say that even though Chiti and Sari are not included, animals are included. However, continues the Gemara. And we learn from here, different words mean different things. So therefore, if he said kol metatli leplanya, he added the word kol. So then afila chati sari, then even the chitin sari included. Afila rechaim al yoin elvad rechaim tachtoino. The use of a mill was a very important keli that they had in the house. And what the Gemara means to say is that the lower part of the mill was the base, which was attached to the ground. Then you had the upper part, which they actually used to grind. The lower part, since it's attached to the ground, is not considered metatli, and therefore it's not included. The upper part, even though it's usually kept in one place, since it is movable, and he used the words kol metatli, they're included. When he said kol the metatli, again, he used it something even broader. Then halacha will be that filo rechayim etachtona koni, even the bottom part of the rechayim are included. Because even though usually the mill is kept in one place, it can be moved, and sometimes it is moved, and therefore it's enough to be included in what he meant. Ibailu, so now they asked, avdik mekarka mekatla dummy. We know that throughout halacha there's a concept of avdik mekarka, that avadim are considered like karka. Various halachas that apply to karka are applied to avodim. One halach is einish bon al karkos. We don't make a shvu when it comes to real estate, and therefore halacha is einish bon al avodim. Similarly, we know we often state that the way we could do a kinyan on karka or real estate is bekesa b'shtar u'bechazaka, and therefore they are also the accepted way of doing a kinyan on avodim. Because avodim hikshula karkos. So now the Gemara says, but at the end of the day, avodim, servants, are movable, the people that can be moved. So when we speak about metatli, are the avodim included or not? And the way the Rishonim, and I saw Reb Leib Malin, explains the Gemara with what they teach us is as follows. He says as follows, certainly the Torah compares avodim to metatlin. And therefore, the Rishonim all say, whenever the question is a din d'oraisa, as far as such a situation, the Torah already told us avdik makarki, and whatever is the halacha by karka will be the din by avodim. The question here is where we're speaking, as in our Gemara, Matanah Shchemara, which Matanah Shchemara, k'ksuvim k'msurim dami, is a din d'rabbanon, how do we treat the avodim? And as Reb Leib Malin explains, when the Torah taught us that avodim are kikarka, what did the Torah mean to teach us with that halacha? Did the Torah mean to teach us that even though obviously characteristically different, but the Torah says they're the same. And once the Torah established that they are the same, they are the same in all circumstances. Or what the Torah mean to say, Avada Avodim Kakos are very different. You can't compare them, a servant to a piece of property. The Torah says, as far as the Halach is concerned, we treat them the same. If that's the way we understand what the Torah said, so maybe only by the Dine Deraisa did the Torah say that the Torah wants that Avodim should be treated like Karka. But that doesn't mean that Avodim are Karka. And if it doesn't mean that Avodim are Karka, they aren't. And therefore, what will we say when we have such a situation where somebody is giving away his Matatlin, are Avodim included or not? Amalei Rav Acha Brei Rav Avi Rav Ashi Toshima. The Braisa teaches us, Hamoicha Seir, if somebody, we spoke about this earlier on Daf Samaches, Hamoicha Seir, somebody sells a city, Mocha Batim, the homes are included, Sichem and Moiris, the various pits and caves in the city, Mechatzos, are the bathhouses, Beis Habadim, the place where they crush olives, Beis Hasholchim, various fields that are around the city, Avlayas Matatl, Matatl not included. However, Bizman Shomer, who, he, V'chamash V'toicha, Afila Ahoy Behema Avodim, Harei Kul Mechurim, they're included. So the Gemara makes its point. Yam B'shlamek Matatlin Domini, if it's considered like Matatlin, that's why when you sell a city, that's why the Avodim are not included. That's why in the Reisha we understand the Halacha, M'shem Hachi, L'mizdam B'Reisha. That's why we can understand the Halacha that the Reisha said that they're not included. Eli Amrit, if we're going to say that when we say Avda Kimakarka, as we said a few moments ago, what that accomplishes is that Avodim are completely like Karka. So the question is, Amaylem is Dabin, why are they not included in the sale? Elamai, says the Gemara, if you're going to say because of this, Kimatatlam Dami, so why did the Bryce say Afilu when he wrote, as the Eva Kamash Betarchai, the Avodim are included? Of course they're included. They're part of the Matatlin. And when you said Kol Meshav B'Toichai, you meant to include all the Matatlin. So shouldn't Avodim, if we're saying Avodim are like Matatlin, obviously be included? Al Mayas L'Chamayma, what is the answer to that question? There are different types of Matatlin. There are Matatlin the Naid, there are Matatlin that move on their own, Avodim, animals, and there are Matatlin the Loi Naid, any vessel, any thing like that, and a utensil. It's a matatlin, but it can't move on its own. And therefore, we could say, therefore what the Gemara is saying is that the Braisa is sort of creating a new category. There's matatlin denayed and matatlin deloinayed. So too, says, and Avodim, given that they are matatlin denayed, may not be treated necessarily the same as matatlin deloinayed. So we could say the other way as well. We could say that Avodim Afilu Tem Kimakarka Dami are like Karka. So if they're like Karka, why are they not included automatically in any transaction that involves Karka? Because Shani, there's a difference between Makarka Denayed, Makarka Deloinayed. Avodim are Karka that move. And real estate is Karka that doesn't move. So we don't have any proof from this Braisa one way or the other how to treat Avodim. Amalei Ravina Ravashi, Toshma, the Gemara brings a different Raya. Hakosif, if somebody writes over all of his assets to his Eved Kenani, and one of the assets that the person owns is obviously the Eved Kenani. And the question is the Eved included in the sale, or is the Eved go out free? Because he wrote himself to, his owner wrote him over to himself. The loch is Yotze ben Chayim. The Eved goes out free because he gave over everything. Everything includes he himself. However, Shaya Karka Koshu, if he didn't give over everything, he left out some Karka, he doesn't go off free. In other words, what the Mishnah is teaching us is by using the words Chutz Mikarka, what he meant to say with Chutz Mikarka is the Eved. So we see from here that the Eved is considered Karka. If you wrote Chutz Mikarka, the Eved would go out free. The only time the Eved doesn't go out free, or one of the examples at least, where Eved doesn't go out free, is when the owner wrote, I'm giving all my assets to this person, except 10,000. And even though certainly the Eved is worth more than 1/10,000th of the assets, he could say, that's what you're worth to me, and that's what I meant. So we see from here that that's the question, is he treated or not? But the Gemara develops it. That if he wrote in the shtar that he's leaving out some metatlin, then the halacha is that he doesn't go out free, because that he maybe meant him. But if somebody wrote over his assets to his son, to his sons, and he wrote the metatlin, as far as the ksuba is concerned, that's not considered that he gave her some assets too. We spoke and will speak again that under certain circumstances, it represents that the woman was meichel on her right. But if he gave the wife matatlin, it doesn't mean that the wife waived her rights to the ksuba. Because the ksuba is not collected from matatlin. V'amalei rover of Nachman Mai Tama. Why is this? It says, avda matatlahu, avda makasim matatlin. Matatla, tatla avashir. And therefore, if the owner kept some matatlin, we say the avadim are those matatlin that he kept. The ksuba, isha makarkahu. But as we just explained, a woman could only collect a ksuba from karka. Since a woman could only collect a ksuba from karka, if he wrote her metatlin, that has nothing to do with the ksuba. Because the ksuba is only collected from karka. And the fact that she accepted metatlin has no connection to the ksuba. Because metatlin ksuba, le karka, have a shear. Therefore, she's still entitled to a ksuba. But what we see from here very clearly is that the Eved is considered metatlin. And that's why if he left over metatlin, we'll say he meant to leave over the Eved. Amalei, says the Gemara, that's not a raya. The reason why if somebody left over metatlin, it's not considered a good document with which the Eved will go free, was Mishum Delav Kros Gita Misnin Allah. So the way the Rashbam explains the Gemara is that this is a shtar shichur. This is a shtar that frees the Eved. The only time a shtar can be used to free an Eved is when it's krus, like a get. It has to completely separate, divorce the husband and wife, and divorce the owner from the Eved. If there's anything that doesn't represent that, then it's not considered that he's free. That's one approach in the Rishonim. The other approach in the Rishonim is that we always have to be concerned that maybe when he left something over, what he meant to leave over was the Eved. What will be the nafkamina between the two pshatim? The nafkamina between pshatim will be if he was very clear that he's leaving something, what he's leaving over, but he's clear that it's not the Eved that he's leaving over. So if the deficiency with this document is because it's not krus, it doesn't represent a total division, divorce, separation between the owner and the Eved. The fact that it wasn't the Eved that was left over is immaterial. We don't have a complete break. If we don't have a complete break, it can't work. If, however, the issue is because we're not sure what he left over, so in a case that we know that it's not the Eved that was left out and that the Eved was certainly freed, the fact that it may be other assets that he retains doesn't mean that the Eved wouldn't go free. Says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, Chamisha, there are five cases that the halacha pays attention if everything was given away or not everything was given away. At Shechtu V'Kol Nechaseyim, they're only considered accomplished when everything was given away. Ve'elahein, Shchimera Avdoi Ishtoi Banav Mavrachis. And the Gemara is going to explain each one of them. Shchimera, the Tan Shchimera Shekosov Kol Nechosov L'Cherim. If a Shchimera wrote over all of his assets to other people, however, the Shire Karka Kolshu, he left over some property for himself, then Matanosu Kayems. Even though we've been learning the Rei Shchimera Kiksuvim Kamsurim Dami, and the gift is a gift, but if he gets Baruch Hashem better, then he can retract. But if he didn't give everything away, then it's not considered Matana Shchimera. And even if he Baruch Hashem gets better, he can't retract. So if he left for himself shayka kolshu, then aim the matanosa kiyemis, under all circumstances, what he did is valid. Loy shayka kolshu, but if he didn't leave himself over any karka, then aim matanosa kiyemis. Next, avdoi, the tanan. The halacha that we just discussed, if somebody writes over all of his assets to his Eved Kanani, Yotze ben Chayim, the Eved Kanani goes out free. However, Shaya Karka Koshu, if he left over just even the smallest amount of Karka, we say what he meant to do with that was keep the Eved, that's where he's saying, I'm keeping the Eved for myself, and therefore, lo Yotze ben Chayim, only if he gave it all away. The next example is the halacha that we learned earlier in the Masechta, Damar Yudam Shmuel, Hakaisa called the Chos of Lishtoi. If somebody wrote over to his wife all of his assets, what doesn't mean that she becomes the owner of those assets. All he really meant to do was, like us, Apotropa, was to make her into an apotropis. And as we learned before, that this is a Hilchasa B'loitama. Because if we look at the wording of what he wrote or what he said, I'm giving everything to my wife. And now we're saying, well, it doesn't really mean that. He meant just to make her an apotropis. But it's a hilchasa b'loy tama. But Taisa says, it's not b'loy tama at all. It's not that it doesn't have any explanation. Because what is the explanation? We don't assume that a husband would want to give everything to his wife and leave his children with nothing. So we therefore say that certainly what he meant when he wrote this type of a wording, what he really just meant was to make her an apotropis. The next case was Bonov. The Tanana Kaisa called the Chos of Lebonov, also a halacha that we just discussed. Somebody wrote over all of his assets to his sons. The Chos of Lishta Karka Kalshu, and he gave his wife some property. Ivdik Subasa, where we said was that this represents that she waived the right, to a Ksuba. But that's only if he wrote away all of his property. That means he gave his sons most of the property. He gave his wife some property. So we say that the wife, when she accepted this, she was Moichel Ksuba. But if the husband kept for himself any property, then this halacha wouldn't apply and doesn't represent that the wife was Moichel, that the wife waived her right to collect the Ksuba. The next case is Mavreches. And the Mavreches refers to a woman who wants to get married, but she has assets. And we know that her husband, while she's alive, to a great degree, is the owner of those assets, certainly for Paris. When she passes away, her husband is her Yairish, and she doesn't want her husband to have the ability to get those assets. So what she does is Mavreches. Mavreches means that she tries to hide those assets from her husband. And in order for it to be considered a situation of Mavreches, says the Gemara, She has to write over all of her assets to this other person, and only if she wrote it over to the other person, then is it can be considered that a legitimate mavreches. And therefore, when her husband dies or divorces her, she could go to the person who she wrote those assets to give it back to her, because I really never meant for serious that it should be yours. Says the Ritva, that this halacha mavreches is only if the woman wrote the shtar when she was already engaged to be married. And that's when she wrote away her property. If she gave away her property prior to her engagement, we don't assume necessarily that it means a mavreches. Davni Meluim quotes three opinions of the Rishonim regarding a mavreches. Rashi says that the gift is considered a sham, and the beneficiary does not have the right to eat the produce of that field. And if the woman dies before her husband, the Hilchos Yerusha of whoever her Yoshim are will get that property. The Rambam and Tosfos Rid say that the gift is a valid gift, but the validity is contingent on her remaining married. If the woman is divorced or widowed, the gift is nullified, and the property reverts back to her at that time. However, they say, as long as the woman is married, she does not have a right to revoke the gift, and the recipient will be able to eat the Paris, and more than that, if the woman predeceases her husband, they will be the owner of those assets. The Rosh is of the opinion that the gift is contingent on the woman's decision not to revoke it. The Rosh agrees with the Rambam that as long as the woman doesn't back out of the gift, the recipient is entitled to eat the peiros. However, says the Rosh, that the woman has the right to revoke that gift whenever she wants, and she even has the right to revoke it not only after her marriage ends, but even while she's married, should she want to change the terms, says the Rosh, she may do it. Continues the Gemara, we spoke about all these cases, and says the Gemara now, Bekula, and all the cases that we just mentioned, Matatla Vashir, even if he left over with himself some assets, the halacha is, it's considered that he left something over for himself, except for the case of Iksuba, because, as we said before, the Mekarki Tekina Rabbanim, Chazal said that you could collect the Iksuba from Karka, Mtatloi Tekina Rabbanim. So, since Iksuba is not collected from Metatlin, their status is irrelevant. Says the Gemara, if there are Metatlin that were written into the Ksuba, that means the husband mortgaged certain metatlin for payment to Ksuba, and those metatlin are snubanayu, so even though they're only metatlin, they can be considered a shir. There's a very interesting machloikis. We learned in our shir today twice, and we've learned this many times in other shirim, that the halacha is that a Ksuba, as it was instituted, can only be collected from metatl, it can only be collected from karka, it can't be collected from metatlin. However, there's a takonas ga'inim, because in the time where this was instituted, most assets that people had, and when people thought of assets and when people thought of mortgages, they thought of karka. Most people did not really have metatlin or even cash. But as the world changed, and certainly metatlin and cash became very much part of what people have and what people own and what people do business with. So even metatlin that a husband leaves are meshubed, are mortgaged to the ksuba. That means if we look at the original takana, when if a husband were to die or divorce his wife, and he could be a very wealthy individual, but all of his assets are tied up in cash, the halacha would be that she would have nowhere to collect the ksuba. The Ga'onim came and said, no, they could collect from metatlin, they could collect from cash. So the question that the Rishonim debate now is how to understand what the Ga'onim instituted. Do we understand that what the Ga'onim instituted, was that cash, metatlin, equal karka? And just like if there's whatever will be the halacha by karka will be the halacha matatlin. Or did they say that a ksuba is collected from matatlin, it's collected from cash, but it doesn't mean it has the exact same halacha? Agamar has been speaking about various kinyonim. And the question is, if somebody makes a kinyon and he says, I'm selling you everything that's in the bag, in a certain bag, but he didn't clearly in any way identify what's in the bag, will it be a kinyan or not? So it seems that if the buyer is aware of what's in the bag, even though it wasn't clearly delineated at the time of the sale, it would be a valid kinyan. But if not, it seems, there's a question, would that be a valid kinyan? Where does this question come up? The question come up by Mechiras Chametz. People sell their chametz. They go to the rabbi and they tell the rabbi, we want to sell our chametz. The question is, they don't necessarily identify all the chametz in the house. Or even more of a question, maybe they do identify all of the chametz in the house, but they forget to identify certain chametz. It's a busy time. They don't necessarily remember. Will that be a valid mechiras chametz or not? And the question really depends, how clear do you have to be when you say kol nechasai? How detailed must you be? And the opinion of Kiva Eger by Mechiras Chametz is that even if you weren't so specific in what you said, the halacha is, it will still be a valid Mechiras Chametz. Says the Gemara further, Amar if the Shchimer has a nechasai leplani, or if a healthy person made a kinyan in selling his assets to somebody, what is included in the chasim? Says the Gemara, Avdei ikri nechasai, Avadim included mechasim, the ksiv, the Mishnah teaches us, Mishnah that we've been learning over and over in our Shia today, Kaisu kol nechasai avdei, if somebody wrote all of his assets to his Eved, Yotze ben chayim. So we see clearly an Eved is included in nechasai. Ara ikri nechasai, the Tanan, nechasim sheyesh lemachrayis, nikn mekes b'shtav b'chazaka. Nechasim sheyesh lemachrayis always means real estate. And the Alochad, as the Mishnah Masechta Kedushin, the Chav Vav Oman Aleph teaches us that the way to do a kinyan on property, to buy property, to sell property, is kes b'shtav b'chazaka. Glima, clothing, ikri nechasai, because the Mishnah says, over the ein lemachrayis, ein niknim el b'mashicha, that it's only transferred Mashiach. Actually, the Rishonim say that that's sort of inaccurate because there are other types of kinyonim for metatlin. But as we learned in other shiurim, metatlin, the best type of kinyon for metatlin is Mashiach. That's why Mashiach is singled out here. Zuzi ikri nechsi, the Tanan, ein lemachrayis, niknim im gachos mishesh lemachrayis. This is what is known as kinyon agaf. So if you do a proper kinyan on real estate, any metatlin that are included in the sale come along. So if you did kesu shtar chazaka on the karka, the kinyan agav, the metatlin are included. Where do we see? And that includes even cash. It says the Gemara Kadar, Rapapa Havalei Treisa Alpha Zuzi. Rapapa had 12,000 Zuzi that he had by people that were living in the place of Bechazoi. He wanted Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, who was going to Chazoi, to pick up that money and bring it home. But as we learned the Gemara Masechta Bava Metzia, the people who were holding the money were reluctant to give the money to Rav Shmuel Bar Acha because they would remain responsible for the money, and they didn't want to be responsible when they don't have control because Rav Shmuel Bar Acha has the money. So what happened was, what they did was, Rav Papa transferred ownership to that money to Rav Shmuel Bar Acha. Ikva nilei Rav Shmuel Bar Acha. But how was he able to do that? The money's in Bechazoi, he's where he is. The way he did it was agav asifa debeisei. He did a kinyan on the karka, and he gave ownership to some karka that he owned to Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, and he did kinyan agav on that money. And says the Gemara, ki also, when Rav Shmuel Bar Acha came back with the money, he went to greet him till Tavach. And Rajbam says it was half the way. Why did he go out to greet him? Because the way we explained when we learned Masechta Bava Metzia was that Rav Papa did not want to have to go to Bechazoi to pick up his money. But as we just said, the people who were holding the money in Bechazoi didn't want to give it to anybody else to bring to Rav Papa. Until they came up with this solution, where Rav Shmuel Bar Acha took ownership of the money with a kinyan agav, Rav Papa didn't have a way of getting back the money unless he himself went himself, and he did want to go himself. Out of great joy and appreciation to Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, to what happened here, he went out to greet him. But what's relevant to our shir is that we see that they're considered nechasim, that cash is considered nechasim. There's an interesting question. Here we're speaking about the selling of nechasim sheish lechayis, the selling of property. In Eretz Yisrael, when a property is sold, there's something called taboo. Taboo is not necessarily an Israeli concept. Taboo means a deed. It's not the sale is not considered a sale unless it's registered properly with the deed. And the Chazon Ish discusses, this question comes up in different areas of halacha, if you have a sale, can the sale be considered a valid halachic sale if it wasn't registered in the taboo? The Chazon Ish used to say that the government is not makpid, not always stringent about the taboo, and therefore the lack of registration doesn't invalidate the sale. Many poskim question that approach because, of course, legally and in any other way, a real estate transaction which is not properly registered, nobody's going to consider a proper transaction. So Rabbi Yosef has has a new chiddush. Rabbi Yoshua says that indeed, until the sale is properly registered in the tabu with the deed, it's not considered a full-fledged sale. But that doesn't mean Rabbi Yoshua is mechadish that there's a new category. It's partially sold, and therefore it's partially sold to that degree. Some suggest that, for example, if somebody is selling in Eretz Yisrael their entire house before Pesach in order to avoid a problem of chametz, but you're selling it, and you need that the sale should be considered a valid sale. But how could the sale be considered a valid sale if it wasn't properly registered? So some Paiskim say that the government understands that when a sale is done for this purpose, they waive the need for tabu. And it's not necessarily only in Israel. It would be anywhere in the world where somebody is selling property, in the selling the entire house, and they didn't go through all of the government registrations and records. If the government, however, is meichel, or it's self-understood, that the government realizes that this is only being done for religious purposes, and therefore they say in this case, there is no need to have that registration.